Hello, this is Daniel Jalkut.
And this is Manton Reese.
And this is Core Intuition, Nothing's Off Limits. Manton Reese, it feels like ages since I spoke with you. And part of that, of course, is that we took the week off last week so that I could just relax and hang out, just like bask in the glow of my indie software career.
By imagining you're on the beach, your feet are up on a nice chair, you're maybe checking your email a little bit, just watching
why even bother
from the Mac App Store.
Yeah, watching email doesn't make my money go round. what really happened, of course, and some of the folks listening know, if you follow me on Twitter, or if you are one of my customers and happen to use the Blogger publishing system from Google, you know that last Tuesday, actually a week ago from today, as we're recording this, I was unpleasantly surprised by the knowledge that not just one or two of my customers who use Blogger, but every single one of my customers who uses Blogger, a not unpopular blogging system, was unable to connect to their blog.
Yikes.
And I was like, ah. It's one of those things I kept saying to myself, you know, this is the kind of thing that would have destroyed me as like a first year indie software developer. I would have just been like, this is it. I'm no longer like, I can't face the world. This is too much pressure. I've done too many things wrong. There's too many people unhappy. There's too much pressure to get this fixed. I was thinking about it. I was thinking either I would have just collapsed like that and been like, I can't take this, or I might have done the opposite where you're like, okay, this is so embarrassing and so discrediting that I have no choice now. You know, I learned about this at Tuesday evening at around 10:30 p.m. And I can imagine a former version of myself as well who would have been like, well, Tuesday at 10:30 p.m. is when I started working on it, and then I didn't sleep all Tuesday night or all Wednesday or all Wednesday night or all Thursday, you know, and then Thursday night I had like a beta, and then I sent it out and didn't sleep all Thursday night finishing it up, and then, you know, shipped it on Friday. And I would have been like, phew, that was the roughest 3 days of my career.
And you were so sleep deprived you realized you'd shoot the source code instead of the actual right. app or something like that. Some mistake.
Yeah, right. So I'm pretty happy. As far as like emergency breakdowns go, I was pretty happy with my reaction to it, which was, you know, being aware that it's a serious problem. Like I got right on, I think I might have gotten, it's already a blur. This is what a crazy week it's been. But I think I might have gotten right on my blog that night and published but it might have been the next morning. I'm not sure. I knew that I had to say something publicly about it, and I had to like sort of take responsibility for it, but also try to, I don't want to say exactly spin it, but to make it clear that it's not totally cut and dry, that like I was just sleeping at the wheel. Like it's one of these things, you know how this goes, Manton, like, because you support, you know, services with APIs, and especially when you support so many of them, it can be really easy to like lose track of when one of them is going to go away or change. Or like you and I both shared the experience of Flickr having a very similar change to this, a very similar transition where they stopped accepting their older authentication mechanism. And it can be the kind of thing where you hear about it and they're like, yeah, you should really stop doing this someday. When you're an indie software developer with a team of one, somebody saying you should stop doing this someday is like an invitation to never do anything about it, because there was no tangible, there's no real tangible problem with the way I was doing things.
Yeah, it's hard to be proactive, because if someday is 3 years from now and you spend a lot of time now, that's time you could have spent on features that your users will actually notice. They're not going to notice if it just keeps working.
Exactly. So I sort of, you know, here's the thing. I don't even want to beat myself up too much about it, because it's to my discredit and to my credit that I didn't tackle this problem sooner. It would have been nice if I would have tackled it about 2 weeks sooner than I did.
Right.
but you know, there were probably a ton of things that were better for me to do in previous months and years. But since you said 3 years from now, that's funny because looking back at this, trying to take stock of what had happened, it was one of these things where at first I was like, oh, Google just shut this off with no warning. And this is so unfair. And I'm really glad I didn't blog something along those lines. So here's another lesson of maturity as an indie software developer. Take a moment at least and evaluate how right you actually are when you think you're right. Because I started looking into it and it's like, oh, they actually announced that this was going away 3 years ago.
Wow.
Or something like that. It was 2 or 3 years ago. And it was incredible because it was announced with the precision of like, this is deprecated now and it will be going away on April 20th, 2015, something like that.
Wow.
And so then looking, and this was like 2012 or something. And so I'm like,
close to hitting that.
And if anything, I was like, oh, they just gave me an extra month, you know? So it didn't actually break until a week ago.
Well, you know what happened really at Google is they made this announcement. The people that wrote the blog post about the announcement 3 years ago, they're long gone, right? They're not at the company anymore.
Right.
Some new engineers, like a few weeks ago, they were like, hey, you know what I just saw? Like, we were going to deprecate this. And the other guy's like, yeah, let's do it. Like, we're a few weeks late. Like, let's turn this thing off. We don't have to support it anymore. They've forgotten all about this, just like you did.
And they're probably thinking, like, this was so long ago. Surely we don't even need to, like, mention it again because nobody out there in the world could possibly still be using this. But here's another thing. To my credit, a lot of stuff actually. It turned out, like, after this started happening, I searched Twitter. And for the keyword is client login, all one word. This is the authentication scheme that went away. And I was like, oh, well, this doesn't make me feel great, but at least it makes me feel not alone. And interestingly, like among the again, folks, just a lack of a – it's just colloquial use of this word. But among the other victims of this problem was none other than Microsoft, who's very, very widely loved Windows Live Writer app for Windows no longer works with Blogger. And the difference between Microsoft and Red Sweater is Microsoft has exactly one fewer dedicated engineers working on their blogging platform. So it's kind of an interesting thing. Anyway, I don't want to spend all day talking about this, but I'm in a better mood now than I was the whole past week because kind of racing against the clock all last week and then, you know, starting yesterday, Monday morning again to try to get this thing ready and shipped. And I got it shipped earlier today. So I'm feeling pretty good that I got a major change to Mars Edit's authentication handling. You know, from knowledge of the problem to shipped the update, knock on wood, no major bugs within 1 week. Yeah. And now, and so the timing of it all is like I was telling my wife, like, man, if this had happened this week, then it would be like pushing it up into WWDC.
Oh, right.
Or that would have been like such a drag.
The keynote, yeah. And then the next 3 days, you just lost basically.
Right. Yeah. I like spent like a considerable amount of money to travel to San Francisco. Stay in a hotel, you know, in order to basically camp out in the hotel room and fix my software.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think in that situation, I would have had to just, plead for mercy and say, I'm not fixing this until next week.
Timing wise, I think it worked out well for you. Congrats on shipping it and being able to respond quickly. It's a nice thing about being a one person company.
That's exactly right. And I got pretty good feedback from people. There were a few people who, especially in my like my lowered like self-confidence of having to deal with this, there are a few people who got to me a little bit with like, how could you not have noticed this? Like,
Why hasn't my refund been processed
yet? Right, yeah. And I actually had, you know, I had that kind of attitude of like alluding to, I'll be waiting for my refund. And I'm like, you know what? I would love to do that more than anything right now.
So I'm curious if you don't mind saying, did you have to refund anyone? And also because you were talking about like your choices in years past might have been throw up your hands and give up. And the problem with that is it's really not a good choice because you're going to end up having to refund even more people Plus, you've abandoned your product, and so you have no future sales. Right. So it's almost like you don't have a choice, really, except to do what you did and hope things work out. But I'm curious anyway, some people were probably still mad. Did you have to refund? Were people patient?
People were very patient on the whole. And fortunately for me, I think the few people who were kind of unfortunately sort of like rough in their reaction to me, they were turned around by my like kind of being cool about it and just being like, you know, this is going to happen. I'm doing it as fast as I can. Some of them were sort of talked down, I think, from from being as upset as they were. And then there's something about the nature of a blogging app that because, you know, some people obviously use Mars Edit every single day. And those are the people who noticed this quickest, right? And they're, some of them are the most upset too because it's an intricate part or an integral part of their workflow. Other people, far more people, as you know, blog like once a week or maybe every few weeks they blog like 5 days in a row. It's like an irregular thing. So the bottom line there is that like due to the nature of the product, there's a good number of Mars Edit customers who by my having found and fixed the problem within the space of a week, they will never have organically come across the problem on their own, right? Mm-hmm. They'll just be like, oh, yeah, here's an update. I'll update that. And then next time they go to use Blogger, it will just work.
The other great thing is that because of the whole point of the app and the way you've diversified into multiple blogging systems, there's only a small percentage on Blogger anyway, right? Because, I mean, this would have been worse if WordPress had broken, I think. And also, I mean, it's not the end of the world if they have to copy and paste their blog post into the Blogger web interface for a week, right?
Right.
So it's like there's an obvious workaround to hold them over.
Yep.
Versus like if you had kind of this proprietary blogging app, or you just take a proprietary blogging app, Tumblr or Squarespace or, I don't know, Blogger. I don't know, something that doesn't have a very good like third-party ecosystem of apps or something where you have to use their interface. If it breaks for a week and you can't write or blog at all, that's bad.
Right, right.
But the way this is a little bit open,
yeah,
you know, people have a workaround.
Yeah, and I felt people that did help a lot of people to just be like, it's okay, I'll just copy and paste for the, you know, for the time being. As a user, that would drive me crazy, but that's, you know, I'm probably the most, I'm probably one of the world's most impassioned Mars Edit users.
As you should be.
Yes.
Well, congrats. And as you said, timing-wise for WWDC, it's a good thing you finished it before because we are less than a week away from the conference. And this thing is real. This is happening. I'm always kind of surprised that, hey, look at the calendar. It's June already somehow.
June. Yeah, I know. And it's always like, it's just like preparing for anything. This is, I'm terrible at long-term preparations. Like, for instance, preparing to give a talk at a conference, which was an issue for both of us in the past few months. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there's stuff like, oh, yeah, I should, you know, like, I don't know, like find my clothes that I wear when I'm not just schlubbing around the house. I should find them and then I should wash them.
Right.
And, or I should, you know, it's all these little things that like, oh yeah, well I've been, you know, meaning to, find my MacBook, you know, or my, extra iPhone battery pack. Mm-hmm. I should find that. Oh, but I can find that anytime before WWDC, and that'll be fine. And then it's like, oh, now we're down to where there's like really only three more days of, for me anyway, of doing that before I'm traveling. So,
yep.
But it's going to be fun, and the excitement is definitely building up. There's really too much for us to talk about, Manton. Variety of things that have been alluded to include confirmation from Jeff Williams about the watch, the bona fide native watch SDK being previewed at WWDC.
Yeah. This actually surprises me a little bit. First of all, that they leaked it themselves, like just obviously from an Apple employee, not like secretly to a news organization or something.
Right.
And also just that they're actually doing this. I mean, the watch is a month old, or I don't know how many weeks now we've had this watch, but I'm a little surprised that they are going to reveal and presumably have a beta or something of the more native Watch SDK already. It seems like they could have easily gotten away with saying, you know, next year,
yeah,
you know, we'll do some refinements to the current API, but yeah, it's too soon. It's only been a month. You know, what do you expect, developers? But it's going to be good. We're going to get something really interesting, yeah. I think.
You know, there's this thing about Apple that people often forget, myself included, that because especially when they're so flying so high and they're like so clearly seem to be in the lead, you don't imagine them having to think this way. But Apple, part of Apple's success is that they are, like, you know, probably to a fault, mental health wise, terrified of the competition,
yeah,
of like them catching up. What happens if the competition catches up? What happens if we don't make this product launch go right? What happens if, and this is, I think, one of the reasons that they're so tentative about changing things. Like, you know, we have things we complain about how the App Store works, and people in Apple are probably like, okay, but what happens if we change it and then it fails, or, you know, it's not as successful. And I think if I just had to guess, I would say that there's probably a sentiment within Apple right now, among the people involved with the watch, that's like, to those of us outside in the public world, most of us, I think, look at the Apple Watch and we think this is so, like, in the lead. And obviously, there's going to be some people who quibble with that assessment, think like the Android watches are more functional or whatever. But in many ways, it's like, yeah, the Apple Watch is in the lead, and that's the time when Apple, I think, sometimes is least likely to sit still. Because they sense that, okay, we got our head start, and the only thing we can do now is try to extend that lead. And so I could see there being an argument, like, within Apple, no, we need to take our time, and we need to, like, get this SDK perfect, and we said later this year, so that gives us until December 30th. So, and then somebody else is saying, no, are you kidding me? We need to get native apps on here fast because the experience is not great right now. And, you know, Android's not sitting still. You know, Google's not sitting still with their watches. And we're going to get caught up to and surpassed. And there's got to be this fear, especially when you sense how much Apple views the watch as part of their future. There's got to be some fear there that if they let that go to another company, if Google becomes the de facto standard wearable wrist computer company, Apple stands to be left out for, like, you know, a decade or something.
Right. And there's also has to be some pressure. Google has their conference usually a few weeks before WWDC. They just had theirs. They did spend a little time at the beginning, I think, catching up on Android Wear and, you know, some of the stuff that the watch has done, the Apple Watch. So there's that, but there's also, I think, as you were talking, I was thinking about, you know, this sense that Apple must feel like they're on a roll, kind of. Like, they launched this watch, and for a 1.0, brand new hardware, brand new OS, sort of, you know, brand new software, it was really good. This thing is pretty rock solid, I think.
Yeah.
And then they did a 1.0.1. Fix some things, fine-tune some things. Again, solid. There are not a lot of problems with this. Someone the other week saw at lunch, they saw my watch and they asked about it. And I said, you know what? To be honest, it works great. Like, I have a couple little things that I maybe like differently, but for a 1.0 product, this thing is really solid. It doesn't have – there's nothing you're hearing about, like, in the newspaper or, like, normal people hearing about, like, this – fatal flaw the watch has. It doesn't have one. And so they're on a roll. Why not just continue that? Because you can imagine, let's say they really drag their feet on native SDK. There's no access to different sensors and third-party apps. They're already kind of limited. Then they become, you know, even more limited as time goes on. And then a narrative starts to develop that third-party apps are no good. They can't be good on the Apple Watch or something like that. Apple wants to get out ahead, you know, in front of that kind of stuff. They don't want 6 months, 9 months there to be this narrative of the flaw is third-party apps can't do certain things or there's limits or something.
Yeah, and if anything, this might be a situation where Apple's being helped by the fact that they've had this unfortunate, like, slowdown of producing and shipping the watches because, like you said, there's no, like, consensus in the public about like what this, like partly I think it is because really there are very few flaws in as far as 1.0 goes. Mm-hmm. But partly it's also, you know, there's not however many millions of people at once getting it, and then like such that like the tiny percentage of people who decide to like try to bend it in their back pocket actually succeed, right? You know, I have very few complaints, and but yeah, I think you're right. It's just like they have that luxury now where they do have an opportunity to try to stay ahead of that. And I do think, you know, I think it is fair to say that the third party app performance functionality gap is a serious opportunity for criticism. Mm-hmm. You know, the more third-party apps you have on your watch, the easier it is to criticize the device, which is kind of unfortunate. It's an unfortunate situation. It's the opposite of what where Apple wants to be, because, you know, what made the iPhone so great? Well, it got greater and greater over time as third-party apps got more and more amazing. It was like, oh, now this thing that used to just started off as an email and calendar thing, now I can run Shazam and I hold it up to music in a restaurant and it tells me what's playing. And I don't think there's very many, if any, third-party apps today on the watch that are like, oh, this is like defining what it means to be a watch app.
Yeah, I agree. There's a couple like notification-related things that I like to have, but there's not like one big thing. And I think just by the nature of the watch, I think people will mostly stick to the Apple apps, at least for a little while. Yeah. So it's not a huge, you can overlook the fact that the third party apps don't work very well or just aren't that useful. But a year from now, that may not be the case.
Yep.
Okay, we're happy to have back Smile Software. Thanks for sponsoring the show this week. If you like learning about great software, then our friends at Smile have something special for you. Join the Smileworthy Offers email list, and you'll get around 2 offers per month for wonderful apps at great prices. All of the Smileworthy apps are used and recommended by members of the Smile team, and each offer includes an endorsement from a team member. The current Smileworthy app is none other than Red Sweater's own Mars Edit.
Woohoo!
Developers of great software can get in touch to put their app in front of the Smile team. Visit smilesoftware.com/coreint to subscribe to Smileworthy and to learn more.
Yeah, how about that, Manton? What a coincidence. Well, it's funny because I was saying at the beginning of the show that, you know, I was frantically trying to get this Blogger bug fixed. And I also knew that this great promotion was about to happen with Smileworthy. And they're going to send out this offer for a discount on Mars Edit to their, you know, list of Smileworthy list.
And the endorsement from a team member says, like, works great with Blogger.
Works great with Blogger. No, but it's... I was already motivated to get the thing fixed, but this was obviously something I also wanted to make sure that as a whole, like, slew of new potential customers is sent to my site. I don't want that percentage of them that has Blogger to have a bad experience. But this is great. It's actually, as we're recording this, I've already started getting some sales from this and some great inquiries. It's always great to see like a creative way for a trusted company within our community to help like kind of do one of these like, you know, everybody wins kind of solutions. And in this situation, it's like, okay, well, they've developed this great list of customers and people who obviously are opting in, and it's an interesting sponsorship because they want us obviously to tell everybody about the existence of this list, but it appeals both to end users who might want to just get a nice deal on something that they know is vetted by the Smile team as being like a quality product, and probably, let's face it, a quality team if they like this stuff. But it's also, you know, an invitation to developers who maybe they think that there's something that the Smile team should be using and should be liking to get in touch with them and try to help feed this kind of like virtuous cycle of recommendation and getting the word out. So I think this is very cool. I'm very happy to participate in it. I mentioned on Twitter, Manton, that I'm in that camp of developers who's like very, very rarely does sales because I don't want to diminish the appearance of value for my stuff. But this feels like the kind of thing where it's just like, you know, this isn't like, you know, woo, sale. This is, hey, out of appreciation for the fact that you already have a relationship with this great company, Smile, I would like to give you a discount. You know, and it's like kind of like a one-time thing. They send out this courteous email as a example, a write-up in the email from one of the people at Smile who is, you know, finding value in the app. In this case, with Mars Edit, Greg Scown, one of the founders of Smile, actually writes up a little tribute to it. And I just think that this is interesting to me, Manton, both just obviously because I hope to sell some copies of Mars Edit. I hope to get the word out about Smileworthy to people who can benefit from it. But I'm also just intrigued by it as an indie software developer, by the creative use of marketing in a way that doesn't feel, you know, schemey to me.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I like that they're very clear about you'll probably get a couple emails a month. At most, you'll get four. Some months you might just get one. It just depends on what kind of apps they have that they love that they want to feature. It's very clear, and also all the obvious things you'd expect from a great small-ish, you know, Mac and iOS developer company, which is, you know, they don't sell your name or they don't, you know, try to do anything, like you said, that just kind of like leaves a bad feeling. You know, these people you can trust, you sign up, you get a couple emails every month for stuff that you might actually find relevant.
Yeah, exactly. And they sort of like have some notes here that they left us to remind people. I think they're sensitive to the fact that some people are cautious about mailing lists. And they say, very specifically, they say they are respectful senders. We don't sell email data or buy it. That wouldn't be nice. And that's a quote. And they say, we love software. We love software developers. We love our users. And Smileworthy lets us do all three at once. And that rings very true to me. I know these folks personally. I've been a big fan of their software for many, many years. And this is just seems like a really cool idea. And it looks like it's already been quite successful. But they're using the sponsorship here this week to open up the attention to it to a wider audience than I think it's mostly been focused on their own customer base. But as we said earlier, you can learn more by going to smilesoftware.com/coreint. And, you know, I recommend just going and subscribing just to take a look at it. If you subscribe, I think what you're going to get is you're going to get one email immediately, which is actually the offer for Mars Edit at a 20% discount. So you can sign up, and if you are just curious to see what it looks like, and then if you decide to stay on board, great. You might get some offers for other great software. But I'm sure with Smile that if you decide to opt out of the list after you've signed up, then they will be completely respectful of that.
Great. Thanks again for sponsoring the show, Smile Software. You can learn more at smilesoftware.com/coreint.
All right, Manton. Well, as I said earlier, there's a huge list of things to anticipate about WWDC. One of the interesting things to me, of course, as a Mac developer, is allusions to a forthcoming version of OS X. OS X 10.11 is apparently coming down the road, and iOS 9, of course. It sounds likely that we'll hear previews, or maybe even get previews. I think that would be expected, actually.
Probably.
Probably beta releases of those operating systems. And, of course, we have, you know, a preview of one of the things to expect in 10.11, or who knows? This is probably up for speculation, but one of the things to expect in 10.3. Where are we, Manton? 10.3.4 is it's been sort of
10.3.4. I don't even know what you're talking about. This
10.10.4.
Yeah.
That's where it is.
This is the problem with these stupid version numbers.
This is the problem with
just me. I mean, I've been ranting on the podcast a lot about how it was a missed opportunity. Skip the .10 and go straight to Mac OS 11. Jason Snell wrote a nice article. I think it might have been even on Macworld or iMore, or maybe on his own site, Six Colors. We'll find the link, but making exactly the same argument.
Yeah.
That it's time to drop the X and the 10 and these nonsense version numbers that don't make any sense anymore.
Yes.
macOS 11. It's time.
That would be a nice gift. I don't think we're going to get it. Yeah. It's funny. I forgot to mention it earlier. You and I chatted privately about it before I released Mars Edit 3.7, yep. which is the version that I just shipped. And I had to make that question of 3.6.10 or 3.7. And finally, I was just like, you know, go with your heart, Daniel. 3.7 it is. But no, 10.10.4 is a forthcoming release of OS X that allegedly has made a major change to the networking stack in that they backed out Discovery D, which was the sort of daemon for handling a bunch of like network discovery stuff, like whether other computers or devices are showing up on the network, getting their names, getting their addresses, etc. And they've backed that out apparently in the latest 10.10.4 beta and replaced it with the old thing, which was called MDNS Responder. Now, I have to admit, Manton, to me, to my ear, Discovery D is clearly superior, at least in its name.
Yes, much better name.
And it's sort of what makes me wonder, does somebody in a meeting just like, well, which are we going to use? MDNS, I can't even say it, or Discovery D.
Right.
You know, it's like Discovery D sounds like something you could get a prescription for.
Well, it's funny because the naming also carries a lot of weight in terms of people analyzing this and maybe overanalyzing it in some cases. But I mean, we assume that it's completely different because the name is different. It might not be. It might be a lot of the same code that's just a newer version and they gave it a better name. For all we know, in 10.10.4, they just renamed it back to have people shut up about it. And it's still Discovery D. You know what I mean? It's like the name carries a lot of meaning. We don't actually know. I don't know. I haven't looked at this in
I haven't
detail
looked at it myself.
I know exactly what's going on behind the scenes.
I think it would be easy to tell because if you're on I guess any 10.10 prior to 10.10.4 betas, and actually the funny thing is, Manton, I'm on the betas, but I haven't updated to the latest beta. And that's interesting because it reflects how lucky I am to be relatively unaffected by all of these discovery issues that people run into.
You know, it's pretty solid for me now. I'm also just on the regular shipping version. When 10.10 first came out, I had a lot of problems with Wi-Fi printers, tons of problems. Everybody in my family were like, can't print anymore. I had a lot of problems with just the basic, you know, iPhone, Mac syncing of, you know, text messages and I've already forgotten the code name for what they call that, continuity, all that kind of stuff. You know, like a lot of problems with that stuff not working correctly. But over a few versions, it actually might have just been one new version of either the Mac or a new update on iOS 8, things just magically started working almost perfectly for me. So I would guess that it was buggy at the start, and then they've been able to refine and improve it.
Right.
Obviously, a lot of people are still having trouble, though, so maybe they just kind of threw up their hands at the end. But it felt to me, at least, like it was getting significantly better, these kind of issues.
Yeah, I agree. And but here, every once in a while, though, I do run into a little quirk where I have to remind myself, like, this is probably not working because of Discovery D.
Right. That's the thing, right? It's like because it's got so much press, you'd want to blame it, even if it's not the fault.
Right.
You know what I can see Apple doing, actually, though? So 10.11 is right around the corner. They might want to make 10.10.4 the last of 10.10. And they may be just saying, look, Discovery D, it's almost great, but it's got a couple bugs. Let's just revert the old thing. We know the old thing is solid. And then we don't have to worry about patching 10.10 anymore. We can focus on Discovery D 10.11, and then we can improve it there. We don't have to go back every time we find a bug to fix in Discovery D. We don't have to go back to Yosemite and fix it.
Just cut their losses on Yosemite. That's depressing. That's a depressing theory for people who are convinced that Discovery D will never be reliable. But I wanted to say something when you said like they could have just renamed it. Do this if you're at a Mac, any Mac. If you're on 10.10, do from the terminal man Discovery D. And if you're on any 10.9 or earlier Mac, do man MDNS responder. And you will see that these are actually, you know, commands. These are actually, you know, tools that have extensive behaviors with like log leveling, logging, and like different options you can pass to it. So it would, I think it would be non-trivial to have one masquerade as the other, except obviously that people are able to downgrade from one to the other. But like there's, there's stuff about the way that like you can use it that, actually maybe it's MDNS responder just doesn't really take any options, but Discovery D does. It takes all these options, like where to log messages to. I guess what I'm saying is it's just like they're not like indistinguishable from each other.
Yeah.
Like they have a different profile. So I think there's something to be said though for the idea that they could try to maybe unify whatever was good about Discovery D that they liked, that like they said, yeah, we should switch to this. Either, you know, pull that back into MDNS responder, or whatever was good about MDNS responder, not the name, try to pull that up into Discovery D. You know, I hesitate to say anything too negative too about Discovery D because, darn it, Manton, there's a person behind it.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully they weren't just like irresponsibly like writing buggy code. It's just the way it goes sometimes that you either misjudge what the usage scenarios are, or maybe there were scheduling constraints. If for all we know, there's like a brilliant person behind Discovery D who was given like 6 months for a 12-month project and then never got the chance to bring it up to snuff.
He got pulled off onto the Apple Watch halfway through.
Yeah.
No, I mean, it seems to me like it's this thing where they've got the old thing. It's been working for years, but it's got all sorts of problems internally, the way it's architected. Who knows? All software after a few years, if you haven't touched it and maintained it, it's got problems. So they do a rewrite. They do the best they can, but this is complicated software.
Yeah.
It's going to have some bugs. And I assume, don't know anything about what this code looks like, I assume that the architecture for Discovery D is better in some way. They've learned from the old thing. They built something new. It's better in some ways. It's got a couple bugs the old thing didn't have. They'll work through that. Yeah, I don't fault anybody at Apple, really. And also, to be honest, like I said, I haven't had any problems lately. So
yeah.
If I hadn't heard all these news stories, I would think that Discovery D was rock solid.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing. I have no reason to mistrust the people who are having constant problems with it. I think it has to do with like the recipe of devices you have and like probably the topology of your network.
Yeah.
I happen to these days have a mostly Apple Airport, you know, official airport branded Wi-Fi stations network. And when I hear people complaining about Discovery D, often it seems correlated with them having some non-Apple Wi-Fi station.
Right.
So that's another example where it's like, well, of course Apple didn't test it as much with all these other setups, but
yeah, I'm sure they did some testing, but again, this stuff is complicated.
Yeah.
And it's not probably going to be perfect if you do a rewrite, but hopefully there are parts of it that are better and they can move forward with that on 10.11.
Yep.
Anyway, before we started talking, you know, I said offline that we don't want to go on and on about Discovery D, and we did anyway.
Oh, but we do, Manton, we do.
But let's wrap the show up with just a couple things. You know, WWDC is next week. You know, we're going to be watching the keynote. Not in the room, either of us. You're going to Layers. I'm going to do some AltConf, meet up with other people. It's going to be a good few days for me, at least.
Yep.
Are you looking forward to anything in particular from Apple or the conference? You know, anything you're kind of anticipating?
Here's the thing I'm excited about that I haven't heard anybody else be excited about. So maybe that's my unique perspective.
Okay.
I'm excited about Xcode 7 because they always have a new Xcode.
Right. That's true. They do.
Right? And people love to beat up on Xcode. But personally, I fall into the camp where every year when they give us a new Xcode, it has something that's just irresistibly improved such that I'm willing to put up with any little like glitches that come with it.
Mm-hmm.
And over the years, I've dealt with many little glitches, and some of them are quite frustrating. Like I used to have scripts I could run. I can't run anymore because they like, you know, took out parts of the scripting dictionary of the app. There's all these little things that come up, and I get frustrated by it. I'm like, why can't I do this anymore? Why can't I do that? But every year when WWDC time comes around, I install the latest developer tools, and I always feel like tangibly so, like, oh, this is the stuff that they've been working on. This is the stuff, some of the stuff we get next week at WWDC from Xcode is going to be stuff that some developer at Apple was wishing she could have shared with us a year ago, and it just didn't make it for Xcode 6.
Right.
And so some of this stuff is like, oh, yes, I've been waiting for this forever. And so I always feel that, like, tangibly I'm getting something from the future when it comes to the developer tools, more so than even like new APIs or stuff like that, because there's going to be some great new APIs, and some of them I'm going to want to use, but none of them is as immediately usable. Like, usually when it comes to developer tools, they're like immediately usable on all your stuff now. Like, remember when Clang Analysis came out? And it was like, oh my God, there's a new tool I can use on every single line of code I've ever written and find bugs in it.
Right.
And you never know what's going to come. Who knows what they've been working on? You get hints about it from maybe what has been happening on the LLVM and Clang lists and stuff. But that's what I'm excited about. You know, and you can't. People are so negative about Xcode, but there are people at Apple who care about making Xcode and keeping Xcode great, and you know, alleviating the problems it does have and making it even greater.
Yep.
I've always been at least a modest fan of Xcode, and I continue to be optimistic about it. And I'm looking forward to what you know. I keep reminding myself, Manton, next week I might A, finally be a Swift developer, and B, I'll be using Xcode 7. Barring total flakiness beyond usability, I will be using an all new iteration of Xcode developer tools, and that's the most important software I use in my job. So, mm-hmm. Pretty excited about that.
Yeah, you're right, and I haven't heard much about that or speculation or wish lists or anything, and maybe that also speaks to how good Xcode is now. You know, I mean, I really like Xcode now, and I couldn't have said that a handful of years ago. And there was definitely a rough period where they were doing those major versions every year. Every WWDC is like Xcode 3, Xcode 4, Xcode. And especially, I think it was the 3 to 4 transition. Like, a lot of developers, myself included, were very negative on that. And a lot of people threw up their hands like, oh my goodness. I think that's the one that was the major kind of UI change. But that team has done a great job of iterating on it. And yes, there's something new and kind of shiny every year, but they've also got a lot of the basics down over the last few years. And it's a great app. I hope they've got something fun to show us, but I also hope they haven't ripped everything up and then started over, because I feel like Xcode is in a good place right now.
Well, now that I've spent a few minutes and you've spent a few minutes talking so nicely about Xcode, let's spend the next hour complaining about Xcode, because I don't want to paint the picture that we don't have complaints. But I do think that the complaints about Xcode are overly represented in our community.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Is like, a couple years ago, there were a lot of legitimate complaints. But the problem when people start complaining about something is, again, a kind of a story develops, and it's like, Xcode is bad. That's the headline. And I think it takes a long time to shed that and to get rid of it. Like, it's safe to complain about Xcode because everybody knows it's bad. Well, guess what, guys? It's actually not bad anymore. Like, Xcode has really improved a lot, I think. But people still complain about it because it's something safe that you can do because everyone knows it's bad. I don't think it's bad anymore. I think it's really good. Now, of course, we run into problems. Just yesterday, last night, I was trying to submit something to Apple's test flight, and like, it would just hang, and like, it was some iTunes Connect problem. I can't blame Xcode. I'm pretty sure it was iTunes Connect, but it's like, you run into things like that where you can't get your work done. And of course, you know, you'll find, like you said, you could go an hour on, I don't know if I could go a whole hour talking about complaints, but that one just came to mind because yes, I hit something. I was hitting my head against the desk. Like, well, I can't send this beta out. So you run into stuff like that, but most of the problems I run into these days, again, I feel like they are part of the Xcode kind of ecosystem, but they're not actually Xcode.
Yeah.
A lot of times there's something like on the server, or just something with the workflow, you know, with provisioning or app submission or something else being really funky.
So we did go off a little bit on Xcode, but I want to give you a chance as well to share with me and our listeners what you're looking forward to most.
So I haven't looked at a lot of the rumors, and I don't have any specific needs actually from iOS or macOS, to be honest right now. I would be perfectly happy with just small improvements. But I did see resurfacing this idea of the iPad Pro and more iPad-specific features in iOS. That will get me excited. I would love to see an iPad that had a stylus. I would love, like, a real one that has pressure that's supported, you know, in the SDK, not something that's hacked on. I have three or four of these third-party styluses, and they're great, but they're not the same as Apple doing something or baking something to the OS. I'd love to see a big iPad, and I'd love to see everything that comes along with that Pro idea of the iPad OS, like split-screen apps, that sort of thing. So that if they do something like that, I don't know if it's a long shot or not, but I'd be very excited about that. I don't really have a big wish list for anything else at this moment.
Now, do you think, as far as a stylus goes, I feel like that was one of those things. Maybe, you know, Steve Jobs was always famous for being like, we're never in a million years going to do that because it's crap. Yeah. And then like a year later, they do it. Like, well, it was crap a year ago, but now it's like the most awesome thing ever.
And I think with the stylus, there's it's probably the most kind of obvious example of something Steve hated, right?
Exactly, right. It seems like quintessentially,
he killed off the Newton. He was bitter about John Sculley or something. You know, like there's huge backstory there. Yeah. He hated it. We've got a few years distance now, and it's time to revisit that because it would be great.
here's a comparison for you. Now, I'm probably forgetting something, but correct me if I'm wrong. So I think another example of something that Steve was dead fast about was the one button mouse, right?
Mm-hmm.
And for years, people were like, oh, God, like just Windows proved like having a right mouse button is useful. Contextual menus are awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And on the Mac, we're all like, it's cool. You just hold down control key and click. and that sort of argument kind of kept going until eventually we never really got to mouse buttons, right? We ended up just having like smart enough mice and trackpads to make it some, you know, sort of work, mm-hmm. like make it work and make it work for people who want there to be two mouse buttons and not for people who don't. And it makes me sort of wonder like I have to imagine the people within Apple who maybe are considering a stylus. There must have been like for some time, like you said, there's some time between us now and when Steve was alive and in charge. There must have been some time there, like right after, where people were aware that like just suddenly like coming out with a stylus would have been like, come on, have some respect for the man. But I also think I sometimes wonder like about Apple, like how much stuff is there that's just sort of off limits out of deference to Steve Jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And it may be the answer is that there's nothing that's off limits out of deference to Steve Jobs. But I sort of tend to think, especially with somebody like Tim Cook in charge still and some of the people at Apple who knew Steve still at high positions of authority, I have to imagine there's sort of like a short list of things where it's just like you could have 10 people in a room all agreeing, yeah, that would be awesome, but
mm-hmm. –
And I wonder if a stylus is one of those.
So that's a really fascinating question. I think the answer is that nothing's off limits because Steve, he was brilliant in a lot of different ways. But one thing that he did that was really great is that he gave Apple an out, like a way to do whatever they wanted, right? He told, you know, Tim, he said, don't think about what I would do. Right? Yeah. Do what's right. I mean, that he gave them a way to do, because technology changes and society changes. He gave them a way, he gave them permission to do what's right. And so I don't think there's anything off limits, actually. I mean, I think they'd have to be sure it was right. But if there are 10 people in a room that want to do a stylus and they're sure it's right, they'll do it. I don't really think so. And that, again, I mean, that Steve didn't have to do that when he left, right?
Yeah.
And he could have said, like, here's my plan for the next 5 years.
the 10 commandments of Steve.
Yeah. And if you think about what we assume Steve was like in terms of micromanagement and kind of like having a very strong opinion and vision for how things could go, you could totally see him doing something like that. Like, this is the plan for 5 years, guys. Please stick with this. But he didn't. He said, things change. don't think about what I would do. Do what you need to do. Do what's right for Apple.
Yep. Well, that's probably a good place for us to stop as we prepare ourselves to make that great trip to San Francisco. And as all of you prepare yourselves to either travel there as well or tune in, I'm sure there'll be a lot of excited people tuning in for the live broadcast of the keynote on Monday morning or afternoon or evening, depending on where you are in the world. Manton, good luck with your final preparations. And I don't know if I'm going to see you next week or not.
I'm going to have to crash the Layers conference, like after party or something.
Oh, yeah.
Where's Daniel? Let me.
We'll keep in touch. There's got to be some crossover. And folks, we say this every year, but we actually mean it. We are unusually friendly people if you see and recognize either Manton or myself and would like to introduce yourself. We would look forward to that. And in fact, it's one of the exciting things about having a podcast and having some people out there who listen to it. So don't be shy. Come up and introduce yourself. I've met a lot of great people over the years who that encounter started with somebody having listened to this show. So yep. It's a great opportunity for us to actually get to meet some of our listeners in person.
Definitely. I said in the beginning of my talk at CocoaConf a couple weeks ago, one of the things I said was like, I am constantly inspired by the apps and blog posts and whatever that our listeners are working on. So definitely say hi. Great to meet you and see what you're up to. So we'll see you next week, Daniel. Hope to see a couple listeners there too, and or more. I just realized I had a couple.
Yeah, well, we do have a couple listeners now, up from just my mom.
Seeing a couple would be good too, but yeah, it's not limited to. I'm just rambling at this point, but good. It'll be great to see you, folks. It'll be good to see you, Daniel. And
yep,
thanks. Again, to our sponsor, Smile Software, check out the Smileworthy list. And it's going to be great stuff going out on that at smilesoftware.com/coreint. Don't forget the jobs board, jobs.coreint.org. We got some really good posts this week from some great companies you'll recognize. So check that out. It's going to be a good next week. We will probably maybe not record next week. I'm not sure, but we'll definitely wrap up after the conference.
Yep, sounds good. All right, I'll see you next week, Manton. If we'll make it happen. We'll see each other next week.
Sounds good. Bye.